There is no cutting of your guaranteed Medicare benefits, period. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah, remember that guy at one of the protests who said, I don't want the government taking away my Medicare. Oh, government isn't Medicare. Medicare is a government program. I forgot. Well, health reform is now the law of the land, and with so much detail still to digest. So we will keep doing segments that explain pieces of it and keep taking lots of your questions. So far this week, we've done the effects on 18 to 35-year-olds and on New York City specifically. Now it's Americans on Medicare. 40 million Americans get their health insurance through Medicare. People become eligible at age 65. Some changes are in store for Medicare. The first one might actually be a $250 rebate check in the mail to many Medicare recipients for prescription drugs. There is real uncertainty ahead for the 10 million Americans who buy Medicare Advantage plans, and there have definitely been myths and scare tactics in the debate, leaving false impressions and unfounded fears. We will try to clear up some of those. So we've got Bill Ferris, a lobbyist from the AARP here in New York, and Ellen Marie Sheridan, senior health policy analyst for the progressive think tank, the New America Foundation. They will run down some of the changes to Medicare that are actually in the new law, some that are not, and to take lots of your questions. Thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you.
And listeners, if you are on Medicare today, or if you hope to be sometime in the future, which is better than the alternative, the lines are open for any question about what the health reform law means for people on Medicare. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your question to our website, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Healthcare providers, we want your questions, too. Are you a confused doctor? That would be understandable. Or anyone else? 212-433-9692 as we try to clear up what's really in the new law with respect to people and providers using Medicare. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. First, Ellen Marie, what's this $250 rebate check, and who'll get it?
Well, it's great news because one of the problems that seniors have been dealing with for a long time is this so-called donut hole. And I don't know whether your listeners know what that is, but we had the Medicare bill passed in 2003, and at that point, seniors got their prescription drugs paid for, which seemed like a great deal. The problem was once they hit about $3,000 of coverage, they get nothing. They have to pay 100% of their drugs until their own spending hits about $6,000. So I like to refer to it more as a pothole than a donut hole because there's this huge chunk of time where you're not getting any coverage, and that's what's going to start to change. First year, that's exactly right. They're going to get the people that get to that point, the senior citizens who get to that point after they spend the their own $2,830, then they're going to get a rebate in the mail for $250. Doesn't sound like a lot for the first year, but then we're going to keep going, and ultimately that pothole or donut hole will be closed.
And under the new law, seniors who spend more than that $2,830 per year on prescription drugs after this $250 rebate check this spring to help with prescription costs beginning next year, the law will also discount brand name prescription drugs by 50% for those in the donut hole or the coverage gap, as I understand it. That's correct, Bill?
Yes, that is correct. Starting in 2011, they will get 50% off of their brand name drugs. And this is, for New York State, this is a very big problem, the donut hole. We have anywhere from 500,000 to 800,000 seniors on Medicare that hit the donut hole just here in New York State. And to get 50% off of their drugs starting in 2011 is a great benefit. And filling the donut hole was actually one of the top priorities of AARP to get done and to complete in the healthcare reform package. And it's one thing that our members constantly relay to us is that the high cost of prescription drugs is taking its toll.
And that discount, that 50% discount on brand name prescription drugs, as I understand it, would gradually increase until 2020, when the coverage gap, the donut hole, would be closed completely. That is accurate, correct?
Yes, the 50% will continue through, but the narrowing of the donut hole will be complete. Of what the out-of-pocket cost would be to the individual on Medicare would be completed by 2010, and they would only have to pay their 25% coinsurance, which they have to pay now before they hit the donut hole. So it's a, in our opinion, it's a great benefit, and one of the great benefits in the new health care reform package as soon as the fix-it bill is passed in Washington.
Dan in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Dan, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Dan. What's your question?
Okay. My question is, will the Medicare premium that Social Security recipients have to pay, will that go up?
Ellen Marie?
That's not going to go up. That's going to, and we'd like to think, if without doing anything over time, that probably would have gone up, and we can look at what's been going on in all of our premiums, and that would have gone up. There's some provisions in the bill that's going to help change the way we pay for medical services, that hopefully that's not going to go, it will go up cost of living and not much higher than that. So there's nothing in this bill, though, that does anything that would increase your premiums.
What about people on Medicare Advantage plans? There is more than 20% of Medicare recipients, or about 10 million Americans. They pay more to private insurers than regular Medicare recipients pay for the standard coverage, but they get more benefits subsidized by the federal government. Bill, what will happen to those plans and the people on them?
Well, those plans, there is going to be a freezing of the, in which many consider an overpayment to insurance companies, a subsidy to insurance companies in Medicare. That's going to be frozen for the first couple of years and then cut back. But on top of that, they put into the bill an incentive program to improve quality services within the Medicare Advantage plans, and that those bonuses or incentives go up as high as 5%. So we're thinking is that this will improve the Medicare Advantage plans. There's also another provision in the bill that would require that 85% of the money that is spent in the Medicare Advantage plan go to providing services. So that's another good feature that is part of Medicare Advantage. But I think it's most important to say that the Medicare benefit, which I think was, as you mentioned earlier, there was a lot of myths out there. The Medicare benefit in this country did not change. Actually, in our opinion, it got better. And I think it's worth saying that now all preventive services under Medicare will be free now. And that's a big benefit to the individuals on Medicare. For an example, if you have a colonoscopy, that could go as high as $800. The coinsurance on that could be almost close to $200. The individual would not have to pay for that anymore. So we think that's a very good aspect of the new program.
That's new. Preventive care, certain kinds of preventive care under Medicare are now covered at 100% for the first time, or will be?
Yes, you will not have to pay the coinsurance or copayment for preventive services under Medicare. And that's a really good feature. And I think the logic is there that as soon as you get people in to see their doctor and to identify diseases, it's better for that individual and better for all of us as taxpayers that will eventually pay some of the bills. But it's just another feature in the bill that wasn't really widely reported, and it's a really good benefit to people under Medicare.
David in Manhattan is on Medicare Advantage. Hi, David. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, everybody.
What's your question?
I am on Medicare Advantage, as you mentioned. I wanted to know what the immediate, the time frame is for changes that they think will occur. And in terms of co-payments or co-insurance, in terms of what, how I could expect it to change over the next year or so. In other words, not a broad concept, but my narrow interest.
Right. Very specifically, what will change? Ellen Marie, how can he find out?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think David's got that's part of the fear that people have had for a long time. Oh, my goodness, what's this going to happen? And I think as it starts to unfold, you'll be pleasantly surprised, David. I think, as Bill just noted about the preventive services, I think one of those things that people have been holding up and they haven't been getting it done, they can go now without any kind of a copay or any kind of a coinsurance. And I have to note that that's not just for Medicare. That's for everybody. That free prevention or prevention without a copay is for everyone that has insurance, and that's going to happen right away.
That's so for everybody. With any kind of private insurance,
yes,
through the exchanges,
yes,
or through their employers or whatever, insurance policies
employers
will have to cover well care, that is, prevent certain kinds of preventive care with zero copay?
Yeah, preventive services that have been approved that we know actually do prevention. There will be no copay required. And, you know, that's kind of, as we get away from the details and the big picture, that's there's a lot of those provisions that we think are really going to change the way care is delivered. And I think for seniors as well, there's going to be a lot more focus on care coordination. How frustrated is everyone that they go to one doctor, they go to another doctor, they get the same test done?
But let's stay with David for a minute. Let's stay on Medicare Advantage, because this is a potential loss for millions of people. You're saying, okay, if you lose your Medicare Advantage and you're on regular Medicare, that's not going to be so bad. But, David, tell us why signed up for Medicare Advantage in the first place.
Well, for,
you're paying more than Medicare recipients, but what are you getting for it?
Okay, can you folks hear me now?
Sure can.
Okay. First of all, I chose doctors, all of whom happen to be connected to Beth Israel. So they are communicating together, and my primary care physician's clinic, which is Sydney Hillman, has now made digital my chart, so it's all computerized at this point. What I'm worried about are things like it eventually being tapered off in terms of that there not being a Medicare Advantage. And the reason I chose it was, my primary reason was because I avoided the 20% copay, where I either would have to buy a Medicare supplement insurance policy, which is a few hundred dollars a month, or pay 20% out of pocket, and I'm a moderate to heavy user, medical user.
That's not going to change, David, and I think it's important. Medicare Advantage isn't going away. The difference is, right now, the federal government pays the Medicare Advantage programs more than they're paying everyone else, and that's going to disappear. But we also see
But then why won't the private insurers who offer the Medicare Advantage plans, if they can't make a profit without this extra 15% subsidy from the federal government and that goes away, why aren't they just going to stop offering it?
I think it's a good question, but then the premise is, will they not make a profit anymore? The way that they're delivering services, and I won't get into the details of how it's different in a Medicare Advantage and regular Medicare, they should be able to do quite well being able to continue those services. And they did quite well before we allowed the Medicare Advantage overpayment back in 2003, and we're just going to hope that it goes back to that as well. But the Medicare Advantage as a concept, and I agree, I think it's a great plan to have all of your services covered without that extra 20%. That will remain, but you're right. The extra bonus payments to the insurance companies, we're going to slowly get rid of that.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Ellen Marie Sheraton, who I think I misidentified before as to what think tank she's with, so my apologies. I won't say the wrong one again. I'll say she is with the Center for American Progress, correct?
That's right, but my last name is also Whalen.
Oh, Whalen. Oh, my God. Where did we get all this misinformation? My error. Ellen Marie Whalen, Senior Health Policy Analyst for the Center for American Progress, and Bill Ferris, a lobbyist from the AARP here in New York, as we talk about the new health reform bill and people on Medicare. And Chris in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Yes, my question is there any provision in the new law for long-term care or nursing home care?
Yes, there are some provisions. There's actually several provisions for long-term care. I'll start with the first one. There's incentives for the state to set up a one-stop shopping, so to speak, where an individual can go and be advised and look for their long-term care needs of their choice, so not necessarily automatically be discharged from a hospital and go directly to a nursing home. There's incentives under the bill that create a one-stop shopping so people have a choice. So it's really to empower the consumer to have control of their long-term care. There's also a voluntary long-term care insurance program that they have built into the bill to have people obtain affordable long-term care insurance. I think anybody knows out there right now that it's long-term care insurance is somewhat unaffordable right now. This will create more access to long-term care insurance. In New York, that's a particular good thing because the majority of our nursing home care and long-term care in the state is paid for by Medicaid, which we all pay for through our taxes. So
that insurance would be offered privately under, is this what's called the CLASS Act?
Yes, it is. And it's a very good feature to help people save for their long-term care. But I think the one-stop shopping, the government saying to states, we'll give you extra money under government programs if you really shift care from an institutional setting to a home and community-based setting. That was a very important feature of the bill because we found in our membership that close to 90% of our members, and we think it's reflective of the general public, they want to age in their home, and they want to age in their community and not necessarily in an institution. So these are very positive features of the bill that will, in our opinion, keep people out of institutional care, which is the most expensive care for all of us as taxpayers.
Any idea what those policies will cost? Will they depend on pre-existing conditions?
No, I think it's safe to say that the ability of insurers to discriminate against people because of a pre-existing condition or because of their age are, as soon as this final health care package is signed, are pretty much will go away in
even,
this country.
Even for privately purchased home care policies? Or will it vary by age?
Well, the home care is basically funded through Medicaid and other means, but that's we already have that in this state and country, and there's all various types of diseases that people have that aren't taken really into consideration of how much they're going to reimburse the provider or that person for.
But
so
again,
I don't think it's a non-issue.
Am I wrong that people will have to, they'll have the choice whether to buy this or not, but it will be a purchase?
Yes, it's a voluntary program. If you don't want to take advantage of it, you don't have to take advantage of it.
I'm just curious, to buy these policies, do you have a rough idea of what the premium will be for a home care policy?
I don't think that information's out. I think a lot of this bill has to be, rules and regulations pursuant to the passages have to be done. I think that will be one of those things that will be developed with the implementation of the law.
Fred in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Fred.
Hi, good morning. I'm on Medicare, and my doctor told me recently that Medicare will not reimburse them anymore 100%, but they will give him a cut of 21% of his reimbursements. And he told me that he will not be able to take new Medicare patients if that cut goes through. Is there anything in this law that will reverse this pay cut to doctors?
Ellen Marie, this is just what some of the opponents have been warning about, doctors dropping out of Medicare.
And and I know it's one of the fears. Now, what you're talking about, Fred, is a provision that your doctor is right, but it's got nothing to do with the health care bill. For the past 7 years now, there has been this problem that there, if not fixed every year, then doctors would be losing money, and it's called the sustainable growth rate. Down on Capitol Hill, we call it the doc fix. And for the past 6 years, this has come up to a deadline, and Congress has fixed it, and it was just fixed again, and we have every reason to believe it will ultimately be fixed overall instead of just putting these piecemeal effects into place. Mm-hmm. So your doctor is not inaccurate. It's got nothing to do with the health care bill. It's been going on for a long time, and there's a commitment down here, though, to make sure that never happens because we do not want to be cutting doctors 21%.
Right, because eventually if they do that, Medicare will become like Medicaid, where few doctors will accept Medicare patients if these cuts keep going through.
Fred, thank you. But as I understand it, Ellen Marie, the new entitlements will be financed in part by cuts in the projected growth of Medicare, totaling $455 billion in cuts from projected growth over 10 years. And most of that is not from cutting the Medicare Advantage subsidies. So how are those savings achieved, and who will feel it?
Well, it's going to be achieved, and I know it sounds hard to believe, but it's going to be achieved by doing a better job providing care. Some of the major problems we have right now with our system and high costs is we've got too many people getting hospitalized when they don't need to be, too many duplication of services that have never even proven to be helpful or are actually harmful. And I think I was talking about this before, the coordination of care, and this is specifically targeted at Medicare patients. Most of the people on Medicare have more than one chronic condition, and 75% of our health care dollars are spent on people with chronic conditions, and we're not doing a good job helping them coordinate care. We actually have been doing lots of work down here to demonstrate to people if we do a better job providing services in a more coordinated care, we save money and have better health outcomes. And a lot of those costs are going to be coming from there.
But, Bill, this is just what some people are afraid of, and that is that Medicare is going to look at best practices, which is a good thing to do, but then say, aha, this doesn't seem cost-effective for the outcomes that we're getting from it, so we're going to deny this under Medicare.
I don't think that's actually feasible under the bill. I think the president mentioned it, and I believe it's explicit in the bill that under this health care reform package, the Medicare benefit is not changing at all. And I think it was one of the things that, you know, there was a myth out there early in the debate over the summer that Medicare was going to be completely changed. You would not get the same benefits that you enjoyed and you actually earned throughout your life and able to obtain when you retire. There's explicit language in the bill that says that the Medicare benefit is not going to change. And so we're very confident in that. And I think there's another point that if you look at the Medicare population, how we can be more efficient and save money over the next 10 years of how this bill goes through, is that if you look at New York State alone, 20% of people on Medicare who go to a hospital and are discharged actually end up back in that hospital within 30 days. And I think anyone out there, when you get discharged from the hospital, the last thing you want to do is go back to the hospital. But that's occurring here in New York State. So the number is as high as 150,000 people are discharged a year from a hospital on Medicare, and they're back in 30 days. That's not good for the health of the individual, and it's not good for taxpayers. And that's one way in this bill that we're going to save money in Medicare in the long term.
And the reason, just to take that one step further, the reason those folks had to get rehospitalized is 50% of those folks never saw a doctor. So we do all this stuff in the hospital, and then we discharge them, and they don't get the care they need when they get out. So there's key provisions in this bill that will help make that transition out of the hospital better and make sure they see a doctor once they get out of the hospital.
But this is exactly where the so-called death panels myth came from, which is that there will be a new best practices review system in the law, or the best practices review system that currently exists will be given teeth so that the recommendations that it makes for changes will become mandatory under Medicare. Is that in there in any form?
Absolutely not. What we're talking about is guidelines to help people, doctors make better decisions with the patients. And as Bill points out, there are no, your services will not be cut, and there is language in there that says no benefits will be cut. We just have not done a good job in this country helping people understand best practices, doctors included. They get trained when they're in school, and it's been hard to change those practices later on. And sometimes things don't work anymore. So this is more about helping doctors have more information, and doctors are very supportive of this. They're not fearing this, and it's helping them work with their patients to make better decisions about what's best for them.
Let's get one more call in.
You're right. That is where the fear came from. You're absolutely right.
Bob in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hello. I'd like to know what the effect is on the Medicare supplement plans, which is a whole different thing from the Advantage plans.
Bill, any effect?
My understanding that the Medicare supplement plans were not changed under this bill. The main changes of Medicare were what really we discussed, the trying to stop the hospital readmission, the donut hole, and aspects of Medicare and Medicare Advantage. My understanding is that the supplementals were not changed.
We are just about out of time. I want to give you each just a very brief window here to mention anything else that we didn't get to that you think is important with respect to Medicare in the bill. Ellen Marie, anything you would throw in?
I just think that people are going to start to see better coordination, as we talked about before. The drugs are going to be coming down. But I think if we could talk about the better prevention, hopefully there'll be sometimes less drugs actually needed. So I think we're just going to have a paradigm shift of how healthcare is delivered, less of this getting lots and lots of services, and maybe some more real face time with your doctor, which is what I think everyone is looking for.
And there are things, Bill, that you didn't get in this law that the AARP wants from health reform. For example, you advocate a means test so that no senior citizen is required to pay more than 10% of their income on medical expenses. There actually is going to be something like that for younger people buying insurance on the exchanges if they make under $88,000 a year. And in fact, your website has a pretty shocking stat that I'll pass along to our listeners, that most people on Medicare still pay about 30% of their income on out-of-pocket medical expenses. So did I read that right? And is there something now you're going to go back and lobby for next round?
Our our lobbying actually never stops for our membership. I think with the passage of this bill, we think we've done a pretty good job for our membership. But at the end of the day, there's always issues, especially in the healthcare system, that we will continue to fight for. I think the doc fix, stopping that 21% cut to doctors under Medicare, is front and center right now. And we really never stop trying to advance our membership in their healthcare. And I think to close is that AARP is going to launch a very nationwide education campaign to really bring to our members and the general public the good in this bill. So we're looking forward to doing that.
All right. When do the death panels start, and how can I get on one?
They never existed.
Bill Ferris.
That was last summer. That's over and done with, and we're moving on.
Bill Ferris, a lobbyist for the AARP here in New York, and Ellen Marie Whalen, senior health policy analyst for the progressive think tank, the Center for American Progress. And Ellen Marie, since I blew both your name and your affiliation early in the show, you have permission to call me Leonard Lopate.
It's a deal.
Thanks a lot for coming on, both of you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer Show continues in a minute.